Now, Ask Dr. Love with psychotherapist, author, love and relationship expert Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. For expert advice on love and relationships, call into the show at 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT. Or you can submit your question online at AskDrLove.com. Now, here's Dr. Love.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and it's my pleasure to be with you again today. My show is called Liar, Liar, Pants or Panties on Fire, Why We Lie, and How to Stop Stretching the Truth. You know, before I get into today's show, I just wanted to say something about that outgoing announcement, call in live. And very few people call in live, and I found out that people are listening to the show. Thousands and thousands are listening to the show after the fact. So if you're listening after the fact and you hear the call in live, obviously you can't call in if it's not 1 o'clock Eastern time on Tuesday. I'm not broadcasting. Don't call. So, and if you can listen live, then of course feel free to call. So today I'm talking about what causes lying, how it erodes our relationships, how to handle a lying partner, and how to break free from its clutches. Then a little later in the show, I'm going to be giving you the three questions that I selected for publication this week. The first one is called, Is My Girlfriend Lying to Me? And in this question, I help out a guy who discovered that his girlfriend is still living with her ex-boyfriend. And when confronted by him, she became enraged and denied the truth. And he wants to know how he can force her to admit her lying. So stick around to find out how he should handle this female with forked tongue. Second question is, can't leave the liar. In this question, I'm helping a woman whose fiancé was arrested for financial fraud. And the dude also ran up a $1,500 internet porn phone bill. When confronted by her, he admitted that he denies the truth because he's afraid she'll leave him. So she told him that if he tells her the truth, she won't leave. And now that he's admitted his crimes, she feels honor bound to stay with him because she promised not to leave. So stay tuned to find out how she can free herself from the hole that she's dug for herself. The third question is called, My Husband Swears That I Feel Looser. In this question, I'm assisting a woman whose husband insists that her vagina is proof that she is cheating on him and lying about it. So tune in to find out how she can deal with a man who is putting the screws to her each time they have sex. And then, of course, I'm going to do a reading between the sheets segment. This one's called Woman Who Wonders If Cyber Sex is Cheating. And I'm advising a woman who found out that her long-distance boyfriend is having cyber sex in her absence. He says that he has few friends where he lives and that if she would just move in with him, he wouldn't need to play around on the internet. So stay tuned to find out how she can handle her tricky dick. Okay, so now on to today's topic. Lying, fibbing, bending or stretching the truth. Everybody does it, even though we know we shouldn't. Well, did you know that research shows that there are benefits of honesty beyond relationships and friendships? According to a recent study presented at the annual meeting of the American Psychological Association, honesty is actually linked with better mental and physical health, according to researcher Anita E. Kelly, a professor at the University of Notre Dame. And her research found that the participants could purposely and dramatically reduce their lies and that in turn this was associated with significantly improved health results, mental and physical health results. And Kelly also found that Americans average about 11 lies per week. Is that staggering? And that study that she conducted, they asked more than 100 volunteers to count how many times they were dishonest during a 10-week period. And they instructed half of the group to make a concerted effort to tell the truth at all times. By the end of the study, those who simply counted their lies and did nothing to avoid them wound up with more sore throats, headaches, and mood swings compared with those who worked hard to be honest. So why do we lie, even though it poisons our health and our relationships? Remember that song Billy Joel sang? He got it right when he said, honesty is such a lonely word, everyone is so untrue. But in depicting the deceptions of love, even he may not have fathomed just how pervasive dishonesty is in our society. You know, when I was preparing this week's show on lying, I had the idea to reach out to Duke University's behavioral economist and New York Times bestselling author Dan Ehrlich to invite him to come on the show. I knew it was last minute. I honestly admitted my error in asking him last minute, and we did touch base, and he's such a nice guy, and he said he really wants to come on the show soon, so you'll be meeting him in the near future. We just couldn't have him today. Now, Dan says in his new book, which is called The Honest Truth About Dishonesty, How We Lie to Everyone, Especially Ourselves, that's going to be published by HarperCollins on June 5th, he says that we lie to everyone, ourselves, and it's the lies that we tell ourselves that enable investment bankers to knowingly unload junk funds to their clients, government workers to steal office supplies, and doctors to prescribe drugs they get paid to speak about. Now, Ehrlich blames our behaviors on two opposing motivations, that we would like to view ourselves as honest, value-driven people, but we also want to make as much money as possible or achieve other goals to get us ahead in life. So in order to reconcile these dueling aims, we employ what Ehrlich calls cognitive flexibility, the ability to minimize the extent of our cheating or lying in order to still view ourselves as wonderful human beings. Now, there's probably an evolutionary purpose for this rationalization, because research suggests that it may be better for our health to avoid thinking about how much we lie if we're not going to do anything about curtailing our lying. Now, there's another interesting fact I came up with. We tend to think that people are either honest or dishonest. You know, in the age of Bernie Madoff and Mark McGuire, James Fry and John Edwards, we like to believe that most people are victorious or virtuous. I said victorious. What a wonderful Freudian slip. I got to go lie myself on the couch. Virtuous. But a few bad apples spoil the bunch. Now, if this were true, society might easily remedy its problems with cheating and dishonesty. Human resources departments could screen for cheaters when hiring. Dishonest financial advisors or building contractors could be flagged and quickly shunned. Cheaters in sports and other arenas would be easy to spot before they rose to the top of their professions. But that's not how dishonesty works. Over the past decade or so, researchers have really taken a closer look at why people cheat, using a variety of experiments from insurance claims to employment histories to the treatment records of doctors and dentists. And what they found, in a nutshell, is that everybody has the capacity to be dishonest, and almost everybody cheats just by a little. Except for a few outliers at the top and bottom, the behavior of almost everyone is driven by two opposing motivations. On the one hand, we want to benefit from cheating and get as much money and glory as possible. That's my virtuous Freudian slip, or victorious. And on the other hand, we want to view ourselves as honest, honorable people. And sadly, it's this kind of small-scale mass cheating, not the high-profile cases, that is most corrosive to society. Now, much of what we've learned about what causes dishonesty comes from a simple little experiment that's called the matrix task. And it has shown rather conclusively that cheating does not correspond to the traditional, rational model of human behavior. That is the idea that people simply weigh the benefits, say money, against the costs, the possibility of getting caught and punished, and act accordingly. Turns out the basic matrix task goes as follows. Test subjects, usually college students, are given a sheet of paper containing a series of 20 different matrices structured like the example, like where they have little boxes. And they're told to find in each of the matrices two numbers that add up to 10. And they have 5 minutes to solve as many of the matrices as possible, and they get paid based on how many they solve correctly. So when we want to make it possible for subjects to cheat on the matrix task, what we do is we introduce what we call a shredder condition. The subjects are told to count their correct answers on their own and then put their worksheets through a paper shredder at the back of the room. And they then tell us how many matrices they solved correctly, and they get paid accordingly. So through his own studies, Ehrlich found that people cheat even on IQ tests taken just for fun when they're allowed to peek at the answers at the bottom of the page. And he admitted that he himself helped himself to a higher Mensa score when he took a quiz in a magazine. So we all cheat and lie. The question is, how can we stop doing it? Well, first you need to identify why you do it. Now, knowing that most people cheat, but just by a little, the next logical question is what causes us to cheat more or less. So the first thing is what's called conflicts of interest. If you have a personal financial interest in a product or transaction, you're not going to be able to make an honest assessment of it because you have something to gain by being dishonest. So, of course, this applies to doctors getting free lunches from drug manufacturers and real estate agents pricing a house lower to get a quicker commission. And journalists also have to avoid conflicts like taking a speaking fee from an organization they cover. Now, another reason we lie is what's called fuzzy rules. Parents who lie about their children's ages to get them reduced price tickets to Disney follow fuzzy rules, or consultants bend the rules if they pad their bills because that's what the boss expects. Now, here's another reason why people lie. It's called the ability to rationalize. You know, it's fascinating. Again, Ehrlich spoke to insider traders and accountants who fudged financial statements, as well as consultants who padded their billable hours. And Ehrlich said that one banker involved in insider trading said that he received all kinds of hints and secrets from his lawyer, and he told himself that it wasn't cheating since he wasn't getting precise tips and that everyone already had this information. It's all about rationalization. Rationalization enables people to cheat and lie. And then Ehrlich also reported a parent who described in an interview that his son was called into school because he was caught stealing pencils from another student. And the man chastised his son and said, "I would have taken a stack of pencils from the office if I had only known you needed them." So once everyone is doing it, runs through your mind, you know you're rationalizing your dishonesty. But just because everyone with a small business underreports earnings does not mean that it's okay to cheat on your taxes. Now, here's another reason that people lie, and it's called the time reason. This is really interesting. According to a new study that was published in the journal Psychological Science, time is a big factor in cheating and lying. So researchers at the University of Amsterdam and Ben-Gurion University of the Negev conducted experiments where participants rolled dice for money. And in one of the experiments, participants had to roll the die three times, and the researchers weren't able to see what numbers they rolled. And the participants only had to report the first roll. But the higher the number they reported rolling, the more money they got. Now, some of the participants were put under a time crunch and were only given 20 seconds to report their first roll, while the other participants were given as much time as they wanted or needed to report the first roll. Even though the researchers were blinded to what the study participants actually rolled, they were able to surmise whether they lied or not by comparing their answers with the answers you would have gotten from fair rolls where there is no lying involved. And by using this technique, the researchers found that the ones who were put under a time crunch were the most likely to lie about rolling a high number. Although the ones who were given unlimited time lied too, just not to the extent of those with the time limit. So the point is, people usually know it's wrong to lie, and they just need time to do the right thing. And if they're given time, they will do the right thing. Now, you know, I'm going to take a little break, and then when I come back, I'm going to continue giving you the latest findings on why we lie and cheat. And then I'm going to show you how you can break out of these bad habits. So I'll be back with you in a second on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. AskDrLove.com is the web's premier relationship advice site since 1996. Visit AskDrLove.com to search thousands of free relationship advice articles on any relationship issue you may have. Or you can submit a question to her free advice column. However, if you're listening live, why not call in? Don't be shy. Dr. Turndorf wants to help you, and this is a unique chance to get a personal answer from one of today's most respected experts. So, if you have a question for her, please call in now at 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. Now back to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
We're talking about lying, cheating, fibbing, stretching the truth, and why we do it. Before I took a break, I gave you five top reasons that the current research shows for why we lie. And now I'm going to give you a sixth reason, and it's called distance. The more distance we have from the source we're stealing from, the easier it is for us to steal. So it turns out research shows us that we rationalize that we're not taking money from someone's pocket if it's a large company. While we would never grab a few dollars from a singer's wallet, some of us don't consider an illegal download of his or her song to be stealing. Now, here's another one. Money. This question, people always assume that we cheat or we lie over money and financial interest. So would putting more money on the line make people cheat more? This has been looked at, and researchers have tried varying the amount that they paid for a solved matrix, from 50 cents to $10. But believe it or not, more money did not lead to more cheating. In fact, the amount of cheating was slightly lower when the researchers promised their participants the highest amount of each correct answer. And the question was why? And they suspect that $10 per solved matrix was harder for participants to cheat and steal and feel good about their own sense of integrity. And one thing that increased cheating in these experiments was making the prospect of a monetary payoff more distant in psychological terms. In one variation of the matrix task, the researchers tempted students to cheat for tokens, which would immediately be traded in for cash. And subjects in the token condition cheated twice as much as those lying directly for money. Isn't that interesting? Now, what about this other idea? We cheat and lie if there's less chance of getting caught. So the question was, would a higher probability of getting caught cause people to cheat less? And so Ehrlich again tried conditions for the experiment in which people shredded only half their answer sheet, in which they paid themselves money from a bowl in the hallway, even one in which a noticeably blind research assistant administered the experiment. And once again, lots of people cheated, though just by a bit. But the level of cheating was unaffected by the probability of getting caught. Isn't that amazing? Now, here's another one. Why we cheat. Cheating is contagious. If you have, in one experiment, they had a student in the room who was clearly cheating. And in this version of that matrix task, the researchers had acting as a student named David, a guy named David, get up about a minute into the experiment. And the participants in the study didn't know that he was an actor. And he implausibly claimed that he had solved all the matrices. And watching this little mini Madoff clearly cheat and waltz away with a wad of cash, the remaining students claimed that they had solved double the number of matrices as the control group. Cheating, but it seems, is very infectious. So the results of these experiments should leave you wondering about the ways that we currently try to keep people honest. Does the prospect of heavy fines or increased enforcement really make someone less likely to cheat on their taxes, to fill out a fraudulent insurance claim, to recommend a bum investment, or to steal from his or her company? It may have a small effect on our behavior, but it's probably going to be of little consequence when it comes up against the brute psychological force of, I'm only fudging a little, or everyone does it, or it's for a greater good. Now, for everybody who wants to reduce how often he or she lies and cheats, here's some advice. You have to first recognize that it's not only bad people who lie and cheat, and you have to recognize the times when you're not being completely honest with yourself. So what then, if anything, can push people toward greater honesty? Turns out the old commandment, thou shalt not, reminders of morality, right at the point where people are making a decision, appear to have an outsized effect on behavior. There's a joke about a man who loses his bike outside his synagogue and goes to his rabbi for advice. The next week, he comes to services, and he sits in the front row. And the rabbi tells the man that when we recite the Ten Commandments, turn around and look at the people behind you. And when we get to thou shalt not steal, see who can't look you in the eyes. That's your guy. After the service, the rabbi was curious to learn whether his advice panned out. So did it work? He asked the man. Like a charm, the man answers. The moment we got to thou shalt not commit adultery, I remembered where I left my bike. So what this little joke suggests is that simply being reminded of moral codes has a significant effect on how we view our own behavior. Now, here's another cool thing. There were another set of experiments conducted with mock tax forms, and it convinced the researchers that it would be better to have people put their signature at the top of the forms before they filled in the false information rather than at the bottom after the lying was done. So these researchers were unable to get the IRS to give their theory a go in the real world, so they tested it out with automobile insurance forms. An insurance company gave the researchers 20,000 forms to play with, and for half of them, they kept the usual arrangement with the signature line at the bottom of the page along with the statement, I promise that the information I'm providing is true. And for the other half, they moved the statement and the signature line to the top. And they mailed the forms to 20,000 customers. And when they got the forms back, they compared the amount of driving reported on the two types of forms. And the people filling out the forms have an incentive to underreport how many miles they drive so as to be charged a lower premium. And what did they find? Those who signed the form at the top said on average that they had driven 26,100 miles, while those who signed at the bottom said on average that they had driven 23,700 miles, a difference about 2,400 miles. So the researchers don't know how much those who signed at the top really drove, so they don't know if they were perfectly honest, but what they do know is that they cheated a good deal less than the control group when they had to sign on the top. So obviously these tricks aren't going to save us from the next big Ponzi scheme or doping athlete or a thieving politician, but they could rein in the vast majority of people who cheat just by a little. And across all the experiments, when thousands of people were tested, they did see that aggressive cheaters who kept as much money as possible, cheaters did keep as much money as possible. Like in one of those matrix experiments, they never saw anyone claim to solve 18 or 19 or 20 of the matrices. But once in a while, a participant claimed to have solved all 20. And luckily, the researchers didn't encounter many of these people because they seemed to be the exception and not the rule. So they only lost a few $100 to the big cheaters. But at the same time, the researchers had thousands and thousands of participants who cheated by just a few matrices. And because there were so many of them, they lost thousands and thousands of dollars in these researches. So what all of this tells us is very few people steal to a large degree, but many good people cheat just a little here and there. We fib to round up the billable hours, claim higher losses on our insurance claims, recommend unnecessary treatments, and so on. So companies find many ways to game the system just a little. And think about what the credit card companies that raise your interest rates ever so slightly for no apparent reason, and they invent all kinds of hidden fees and penalties, which are often referred to within the companies as revenue enhancements. Think about the banks that slow down check processing so that they can hold on to your money for an extra day or two, or charge exorbitant fees for overdraft protection and for using your ATMs. And all that means is that although it's obviously important to pay attention to flagrant misbehaviors, it's probably even more important to discourage the small and more ubiquitous forms of dishonesty, the misbehavior that affects all of us as both perpetrators and victims. And this is especially true given what we know about the contagious nature of cheating and the way that small transgressions can grease the psychological skids to larger ones. So what we want to do is install locks to stop the next Bernie Madoff, the next Enron, the next steroid-enhanced all-star, the next serial plagiarist, the next self-dealing political miscreant. But locking our doors against the dishonest monsters is not going to keep them out. They'll always cheat their way in. It's the woman down the hallway, the sweet one who could not even carry away your flat screen TV if she wanted to, who needs to be reminded constantly that even if the door is open, she can't just walk in and borrow a cup of sugar without asking. I heard a story that captures rather nicely our society's misguided efforts to deal with dishonesty. You know, one day this guy, Peter, locked himself out of the house, and after a spell, the locksmith pulled up in his truck and picked the lock in about a minute. So it was obviously amazing how quickly and easily this guy was able to open the door, and Peter said this to the locksmith, and the locksmith told him that locks are on doors only to keep honest people honest. So 1% of the people will always be honest and never steal. Another 1% will always be dishonest and always try to pick your lock and steal your television. So locks won't do much to protect you from the hardened thieves. And you can get into your house if they really want to. But the purpose of the locks, the locksmith explained, is to protect you from the 98% of mostly honest people who might be tempted to try your door if you had no lock. So now let's take a moment. I just want to say before I finish this discussion, what about lying as it goes on in interpersonal relationships? I'm not just talking about monetary lying or, you know, these other kinds of things. You know, I always think about lying in interpersonal relationships as the avoidance defense mechanism in action. You know, you want acceptance, you want to preserve your self-esteem, you don't want to get into trouble. And obviously this pattern of lying to protect yourself from getting into trouble begins in childhood. If you were yelled at, if you were harshly punished, you learn to lie to avoid a beating or a punishment. And obviously the personality is like a willow. It gets bent in this way. And you learn now to just lie to avoid trouble. You lie to your partner to avoid his or her wrath. Now, the problem is with all these defense mechanisms, they backfire. And the very thing you're attempting to ward off is what you get in spades. You just don't get it in the moment. You get it tenfold down the line. So rather than being honest in the moment and risking your partner's wrath, you avoid it. And then the partner finds out you're lying and you get 10 times more wrath down the road. So you want to be conscious of this and make a choice. You know, I have a patient who hides her texts to her ex-boyfriend because she's afraid her husband will be jealous. But her sneaking makes him more jealous because he thinks, well, she must be cheating. So you have to become conscious of your urge to lie or conceal the truth. And you have to sit with the anxiety that comes up when you don't do the knee-jerk reaction and lie. And you have to give yourself a choice. Would I rather face the music now or face a very huge explosion later? That's how you begin to get a handle on lying in your interpersonal relationships. All right, let me give you a couple tweets on this topic. Lying is very trying. There's a reason the word lying rhymes with dying. When it comes to lying, say you aren't buying. Be impeccable with your word, or else you will feel like a turd. If your partner lies and doesn't feel guilty, then his or her conscience is exceedingly filthy. Don't take lying down. View all lying with a very big frown. Your conscience shouldn't be fleeting, and don't believe that eating ain't cheating. Lying leads to dying. When you speak with forked tongue, on some level, you know you deserve to be hung, and your conscience may arrange to get you stung. If you lie in order to get rich, your soul's going to end up in a ditch. You don't have to lie to get ahead, so try being honest instead. Ditch the lying, or you'll end up crying. Lying may get you ahead, but isn't there another way instead? Remember that lying harms your health and damages your sense of inner wealth. When you lie in order to get ahead, in the end, your soul ends up dead. Since relationships and health are ruined by lying, isn't honesty really worth trying? Okay, let me take a break, and I will be back with you in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. If you like what you're hearing, you can learn about Dr. Turndorf's techniques for turning conflict into connection and healing in her critically acclaimed, groundbreaking book, Till Death Do Us Part, Unless I Kill You First, a step-by-step guide for resolving relationship conflict. Find out more about this book and read a free excerpt by visiting AskDrLove.com. This is Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. And if you have a question for her, please call in now at 888-463-6748. This show is for you, the listeners, so please give her a call now. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
You know, I was thinking during the break about the question of lying and then how to reconcile that with the idea of telling the truth. Because a lot of times people will say in relationships, oh, honesty is the best policy. I had to tell you the truth. And then people will use that mandate in order to rationalize assaulting the partner. Oh, well, I had to be honest. I had to tell you the truth. So here's where it gets so fuzzy. You're not supposed to tell the truth if you know that telling the truth would be damaging or destructive to your partner. And if you hurt your partner, obviously what you say and do boomerangs back on you. You only want to say what you know is going to be beneficial, helpful, and constructive. You know, I had somebody tell me yesterday, it was so heartbreaking, my hairdresser, I was sitting in the chair, and she said to me that her ex-husband said, I've got to be honest with you. I never think about you. I can't stand seeing you. I never miss you. Now, come on. Being honest in that way, that's an assault. He didn't mean to be helpful. He should have shut his mouth. So you have to also figure that into the mix when you work on evolving and not lying and cheating. You also have to think about not only just being honest at the other person's expense. Only be honest when you know it's going to be helpful. You don't have to say everything. And that's not the same as lying. You have to use your discretion and your discernment. All right, so here's the first question that I promised to answer, and it's called, is my girlfriend lying to me? Dear Dr. Love, I'm a 43-year-old male who's been looking for a new female companion. It's been 2 years since my last relationship, and I feel over that now. I met a woman about a month ago and see her every day on her terms. I didn't get her phone number. She says she lives with her aunt on an estate. I know of another ex-boyfriend who lives in the same town as this presumed aunt. I pick her up and drop her off each day at a local spot in town. I feel she lives with her ex-friend because I know his address, and she is always walking to or from that general area, same street, and not from where she says her aunt lives. Her dialogue, however, is always referring to her aunt. And when I tried to confront her in a way that I just wanted the truth, she became very angry and said that she was not effing him and she lived with her rich aunt. I told her I don't mind where she lived, but just wanted her to be honest. I found the guy's phone number on the net by the address. I called it from a phone booth and she answered the phone and I hung up. I'm trying to ignore this and to believe her, but it tears me up inside every day. How can I get her to tell me the truth? Or I feel she should want to do that on her own when it's the right time and to just let things take their course for now. That's it for now, and thanks for being out there. Okay. Your question to me was how you could make your girlfriend tell you the truth. And let's face it, you can't. You know that old joke, how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? One, but the light bulbs really got to want to change. It's hard enough for us to change our own selves. You can't make somebody else change. And I'm not saying that only you can't. No one can make a person do anything he or she doesn't want to do. And the more you try to push her, the more she's going to dig her heels. That's true for everyone. Now, sometimes people lie to protect themselves from real or imagined harm. I was talking about that a couple of minutes ago. So lying in this case is a type of avoidance defense mechanism. And the defense is born in childhood as a result of being raised by an abusive parent. The child learns to lie in order to avoid a punishment or a beating. And lying soon becomes a way of life. And as adults, that child, grown up now, continues to lie to avoid real or imagined punishment. Now, of course, the lying always, always, always backfires. And it's all self-defense mechanisms do, all unconscious defense mechanisms do. So instead of protecting the self from harm, the liar actually ends up getting into even deeper hot water. He or she may avoid a punishment in the moment, but when the lying is found out, the punishment is 10 times worse. Now, sometimes people lie because they are sociopaths who have no conscience at all. That's that 1% that the researchers were talking about. They're going to lie no matter what. Now, a lack of conscience is also the result of early upbringing. That person was either raised by a sociopath and or was never taught right from wrong and helped to be accountable for his or her actions. Your girl sounds like she's not just lying to avoid a punishment. She sounds to be without moral fiber. So the larger issue here is that you seem willing to remain in a relationship with a pathological liar. And you have to ask yourself why you want to continue a relationship with someone you cannot trust. Now, I have the impression that the struggle you're having with this girl replays a childhood wound of your own. And if you're interested in figuring out what that wound is, then ask yourself, why am I drawn to someone that lies to me? And we have a clue to the answer to that question in the statement you made. I try to ignore the signs that she's lying. That statement says you know she's lying, but you want to pretend that she isn't. Now, do you know why your mind wants to talk itself out of what it knows is the truth? Think back, and I suspect you're going to recall experiences during your childhood in which one or both of your parents lied to you, didn't keep their word, or double-talked. And if I'm right, you hoped against hope that one day they'd finally be honest and come through. And because their behavior hurt you so much, you tried to make the pain go away by ignoring reality. But no matter how much you hoped for better or ignored reality, that parent continued to snow you just like this girl does. Now, unfortunately, as with all repetitions, our minds choose people who are damaged in exactly the same ways that our parents were so that we can never obtain the better outcome and that we so desperately need and desire. So in this case, it sounds like this girl is a liar, and no matter how much you hope and pretend, she is still not going to be any more truthful with you than the person who let you down when you were young. And you can't make a leopard change its spots, and you can't make a liar stop speaking with forked tongue. I'm really sorry, because I know how strong the wish is to rewrite history with what I call the happy ending. But the only way any of us can rewrite our histories with that better ending is to consciously choose people who are different from the parents that disappointed us. And when you are ready to choose a healthier partner, then you will have the feeling of safety and trust that you so desperately desire and deserve. My book, Till Death Do Us Part, is going to show you how to heal your wound so that you will be free to move on and find a partner who is faithful and true to you. After you read the book and you do your healing, keep in touch with me, because I know that an honest love awaits you. Take care. All right, now here is the next question I'm going to answer. It's called Can't Leave the Liar. Dear Dr. Love, I'm afraid I need some advice. I'm 22 and engaged to a man that I don't trust. In the past year, he has been arrested, fired. Actually, there has been too much trouble to mention. He isn't the same person that I fell in love with. Our main problem is that he lies to me. He lies about everything, but mostly about money. He's been charged with fraud twice this year already, so I'm talking about serious lies. He recently incurred a very large phone bill, $1,500, by entering internet porn sites, which I am very against. He knows my wishes, but he did it anyway. I found out when the phone bill came, and he still denied it. Finally, he admitted it, but he only ever admits it when I catch him. I don't feel that I can marry him if I don't trust him. I always ask him to just come clean with me. He always tells me that there's nothing else he's hiding. Then I find the evidence. I feel more like his mother than his fiance. He told me before that he lies to me because he's scared that I'll leave him. I told him I won't leave him if he would just tell me the truth. Now I feel stuck because I can't leave because he lied to me. I don't know what to do. Please help me get my relationship under control. Okay, so listen, I hear that you're asking me to help you get the relationship under control, but that's impossible because the man you are seeing is completely out of control and he doesn't want to get in control. And as long as you hitch your wagon to him, you're going to be out of control with him. Second, you need to figure out why you would put your energy into attempting to change someone else. You need to be focusing on yourself and on finding out why you are staying with this man. Now, I know you said that you made a promise to stay with him as long as he is truthful. So if he admitted that he was an axe murderer or a child molester, would you still feel obligated to stay? In my book, Till Death Do Us Part, I talk about violations of what I call relationship laws. When a person violates these basic laws, he or she is violating and rupturing the relationship. No relationship can exist with a person who is abusing drugs, stealing, lying, gambling. The person's immoral or illegal behavior automatically breaks the relationship. So why are you patiently waiting around until he delivers the final death blow to himself and the relationship? You're not obligated to stay on a sinking ship. And don't tell me you feel sorry for him. There's nothing to pity here. He is a criminal, a sociopath, and he isn't asking for help. And he will take you down with him if you let him. Now, you need to figure out why you think you need to stick around and fix him or get him under control. So I'm going to bet you grew up with a parent who was a sociopath. And if I'm right, you probably felt that it was up to you to fix your parent. Now, all kids have that feeling because they can't trade their parent in. So they think that they have to make do with the one that they are given and that they have to fix them. And here's where the efforts to fix and save the parent come in. Well, he isn't your parent and fixing him isn't your job. So Till Death Do Us Part is going to help you break free of this pattern. And if you need additional help, don't hesitate to reach out to me in my private consulting division. I want to hear from you. Keep me posted on your progress. All right, let me take a brief break, and then when I come back, I'm going to give you a juicy question on a husband who swears that his wife feels looser every time they have sex. Be right back.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. If you've recently been through a breakup and are looking for a second chance, wondering how you can reconcile with your ex, or if it's even possible after all you've been through, Dr. Turndorf's latest book, Make Up, Don't Break Up, presents her five-step plan for reconciling with your ex. This plan was developed out of years of research, working with thousands of couples at her Center for Emotional Communication. This is a proven no-hype and no-nonsense method that gets right to the root of the problem to guide you to the right path towards reigniting a lasting relationship. For more about Make Up, Don't Break Up, visit AskDrLove.com. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
So I told you, I promised we would have a juicy question, and this one's juicy. It's, your husband swears that you feel looser. Dear Dr. Love, I've been with my husband for almost 6 years. We have three boys. For all three, I had C-sections. My question is, my husband swears up, down, every time we have sex that I feel looser. Is that possible? Plus, I have not been with anyone else in this time frame. My husband is not that big, and I don't see how I could be getting looser. Or do you think he's making it up? Please help. Well, so your husband screwed you and he thinks you feel looser. So I'm thinking your husband has a screw loose, really. You said that you swear you haven't been with anyone else. So I'm assuming that your defensive statement is in response to his accusation that you've been sleeping around and stretching yourself out from overuse that comes with infidelity. Well, before you get your nose out of joint over the accusation that your vagina is suddenly stretched out, let's make sure that you are hearing his message correctly. Because, in other words, we want to know if he's speaking emotional Morse code, saying to you that he thinks you're cheating, And this may be his way of telling you that he thinks how he feels about you and the marriage. So first clarify whether he thinks you're screwing around on him. And if he does believe that you're cheating and you're not, he is either psychotic, which means delusional and divorced from reality, or he's struggling with feelings about you and the marriage that he doesn't know how to communicate. The feeling he has is his emotional reality, isn't factual. It isn't wrong or right. It just is, and it needs to be understood and nothing more. So what we need to do is understand what his cheating accusation really means. So to do this, ask him if he feels that you are actually cheating on him or pulling away from him, and then ask him what it is that you are doing or not doing to meet his needs. So these questions need to be asked so that we can get to the bottom of the underlying feeling that's fueling his emotional reality. And if we don't get an understanding of what he's feeling and why, your marriage may not make it. And then he might leave you or cheat on you as revenge. So if he's not accusing you of cheating and you actually do feel different to him, the bottom line is there's no disputing his reality again. From an anatomical point of view, something has changed. Body parts do tend to stretch out and distend with age, so it's possible that you have loosened. But it's also possible that he isn't experiencing as full erections as when he was younger. And if he isn't filling you as much as he did before, you could indeed feel looser to him. Now, if this is just an anatomical issue, you're both going to need to handle the issue with sensitivity and consideration for each other's feelings. The focus shouldn't be on whose fault the problem is, but on how you can work together to make sex feel more satisfying for him. So one thing for him to try is the rear entry position, which prevents him from entering you as deeply. And since the entrance of the vagina is narrower at the entrance, if you have been stretched out, or if his penis is not as engorged as before, this will help. You can also do Kegel exercises, which will tone and tighten your vaginal muscles and also enable you to squeeze his penis tighter when he's inside you. If you still have problems, see your gynecologist to make sure all is fine with you and have him see a urologist who specializes in male sexual dysfunction to check that he's becoming fully erect. Okay, good luck. And I hope this works for you. All right, now, as promised, I'm going to leave my consulting room and enter the bedroom so we can read between the sheets. This question is called Woman Who Wonders If Cyber Sex Is Cheating. Dear Dr. Love, I am so confused. My boyfriend of 4 years has lied to me about an internet relationship that began over 4 months ago. He says that he has turned to the internet because he has limited friends and I'm not around. He has dangled the carrot of living together as an option to marriage since he has 2 more years of school and lives over 300 miles away. I became aware of this relationship after he started talking about his email buddy and started knocking the concept of marriage. He said it was harmless and that she called him for counsel. Then they started talking on the phone. I've known for some time that he was a liar, but I thought he would not lie to me. He repeatedly stated that there was nothing going on as they live over 1,000 miles away. Several days ago, my instinct, which is always right, told me to check his email. They had plans to meet. Also, I found that he was having phone sex with this person and 2 others. Needless to say, he was furious that I invaded his privacy. He gave me the password. He wants to reconcile and even propose marriage. I don't think I can trust him. My question is, do you think this warrants as cheating? Now listen, if you feel cheated upon, then you're being cheated on. And even though he didn't cheat in action, he is making tracks to cheat by making a date to meet with this woman. Plus, he is cheating you out of himself by placing his energy in flirting with and verbally making love to others. Every woman needs to feel that she is her boyfriend's or husband's number one girl, and clearly you are not feeling this. And what's equally unacceptable is the fact that he lied to you. And let's face facts. If he's so lonely without you, he could get on the horn and talk to you, not some stranger. And by making imaginary love with others, he's pushing you away. And yes, he's an intimacy and a commitment phobic and a liar. But enough about him. It's you I'm worried about. You said you knew he lies, but never thought he'd lie to you. And I'm afraid you've been living in denial here because it feels like some unfinished childhood business is afoot. Because I get the sense that your unconscious has given a man that you have chosen a man that lies because you are used to being lied to. And the unconscious fantasy behind this choice is the wish that this time around you're going to fix the liar. Isn't that exactly what you said? I never thought he'd lie to me. But he's lying to you about not being involved with someone else, and he is planning to meet with his cyber sex partner. So at this point, your focus must be on fixing you. Because if you focus on the question, was he really cheating, you're going to miss the point entirely. This isn't about him. It's about you and your willingness to talk yourself out of the truth, about your way of pulling the wool over your eyes, about your need to hold on to the fantasy that a liar won't lie to you. Now, as part of your healing, you're going to also need to face the fact that you cannot fix him. People that lie like this usually don't want to change their ways. Lying is a pattern that is learned early in life, and it becomes a deep-seated part of that person's personality. It's a coping strategy that's used to avoid pain and escape punishment or intimacy or connection. And unless the person experiences great suffering as a result of his lying, he or she is rarely going to give it up. So you need to assume that he won't stop lying to you. And do not believe words or promises that he will change or marriage proposals unless he makes a behavioral follow-through and gets professional help. So focus on understanding what piece of your childhood you're trying to heal, which parent lied to you, then own your fantasy that you wish to fix that lying parent and never be lied to again. Next, take a hard look at reality. Does this guy want to fix himself? Is he making steps to do so? And if your answer is no, then you're going to need to face these facts because he's never going to change and your life will be filled with a series of lies and heartache. And ultimately, you're going to need to make a reality-based, not a fantasy-based choice by asking yourself, do I want to live with someone who will always lie to me? Am I willing to stay with him knowing that he's never going to change? Now, these are hard questions. They're painful questions. But the only way you're going to be able to fully face reality and not live under the fantasy that he will never lie to you is for you to heal your old scar from childhood. And when that wound is healed, you're no longer going to want to wish to fix liars in your adult life. And this man will become a thing of the past. So I hope that my answer clarifies where you are and what you need to do now. All right. That's all I have for you today on Ask Dr. Love Radio. And I gotta be honest with you. This guy said to me with a Long Island accent, I gotta be honest with you. Brace yourself when somebody says it. It means that he's not honest with you most other times. But I gotta be honest with you. I really did enjoy being with you. And I look forward to being with you again next week on Ask Dr. Love Radio. Take care.